There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Now joining me in studio are two colleagues down here at ARN. We've got Gabrielle Khaled, or Gabby as we like to refer to her in the office, who is here to talk to us about her World Cup experience, and a man who you will know very well for listeners to Dubai I-103.8 down the years, Mr. Mark Lloyd, my colleague, joined us live in the studio. So Gabby, just before we went to the break there, you were a bit happy, a bit sad. Why?
So, it was the first time Egypt qualified in a very long time. I am Egyptian, so very happy to watch them. They didn't do as well as we wanted them to do, but I kind of continued from that. So I was very happy at the beginning, obviously sad when they were out. But my husband didn't realise to tell me that I was a World Cup widow. And yeah, now I found out I'm a World Cup widow. The first thing he said to me once the World Cup is over, oh, I'm going to have to talk to you now. So I had this void. I didn't realise. It was probably the first time that I've ever really watched a lot of matches with him. And it's the first time I've been interested in football with him. So I think we bonded a lot. So now I'm sad that I found out I'm a World Cup widow, because I didn't know at the time. I thought we were enjoying it together.
Isn't it extraordinary? Because you talk there about the time spent, isn't it? And I suppose football, but especially in a major event like the World Cup, is divisive in that sense that there will be occasion when your loved one just disappears to watch the most random game known to mankind. You think, what on earth
are you doing watching
is
that?
Your interest in that one? But at the same time, when Egypt are playing, or in my example, when England were playing, and I got to watch it with my son and my kids, and they got involved, and it became a great bonding thing. Yep. So you've got the two sides, really, haven't you?
You really have, and the balance of it, and you're really enjoying it together. And then, like I say, it wasn't until the World Cup was over, and I thought, oh, wow, this whole time I've basically been an accessory to the World Cup. I haven't really been enjoying it with you.
Mark Lloyd, also in studio with us as well. Lloyd, is there a case for sort of World Cup withdrawal, do you think, the symptoms?
I think there is. I was thinking about this actually coming up on the metro this morning, and what am I going to do tonight? And I'll just have to go to bed early and be really boring. Yeah, I really enjoyed the World Cup this year. The first part of it, the actual kind of qualification moments, I was in the Philippines, so I wasn't getting to watch it then, but I managed to get back to Dubai for the first game of the England campaign. Thoroughly enjoyed that. I went to the Hard Rock Cafe and watched it, which was a top atmosphere, massive screen, and really enjoyed that game. But then I found out by accident that I'd actually got the World Cup package at home. I didn't know that. So I'm actually calling up Etisalat saying, yeah, I'd like to order the World Cup package, please. And they check out all your details on the computer, and they said, you actually already got it, sir.
Brilliant.
Yeah, only me could do that.
Interesting. I just want to ask you, because you mentioned there that you were in the Philippines at the beginning of the tournament. And one thing that's really struck me about this year's World Cup, I'm sure all World Cups, is how it brings a variety of different nationalities out to watch games in public. And you really don't see the diversity when it comes to that as well. I mean, is it something, I know that Manny Pacquiao was fighting over the weekend, and that brings everyone out in the streets in the Philippines.
Yep.
Football the same though as well, or not?
I think it's growing. Obviously, basketball is the big one.
Of course,
They're absolutely crazy about basketball. But yeah, a lot of the kind of sports bars had got the games on.
Yeah.
Odd timings though. Some of the times were a little bit, not too friendly. But generally, there was quite a buzz about the World Cup in the Philippines.
Gabby, that's one thing that's really sort of struck me this year, is just the breadth of nationalities.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we make this assumption, don't we, that people might not watch Premier League football every week in, week out, but there's something about a World Cup that brings everybody out, and somebody becomes a football pundit overnight as well, an expert in the game.
They do.
Yeah, I felt that I was one of them, and I really wasn't. I was the same like Mark, actually. I was in Egypt for the first game. It wasn't a great game, but the fact that there were so many Egyptians there watching this one game together was amazing, and it's just an incredible way to bring people together over a sport. So, and I'm not the biggest diehard football fan. So
that said, though, I mean, football is huge in Egypt, isn't it?
Yes, massive.
And Mo Salah is obviously
the
new king, isn't he?
He's going to be the new president, I'm sure of it, if they have their way.
But it's the, I mean, can the same be said, Dan? I was, because I've been discussing with a number of fans over the times, and I've just been fascinated personally by the number of Southeast Asian fans that I've seen turn out in force, vocal, passionate, for all the games of the World Cup as well. We didn't have an Indian, a Pakistan, a Bangladeshi team at the World Cup, and yet the fans came out in their millions across the world. Why is that? Is that just the World Cup?
I think it's also to do with the top team. So you have got your Ronaldos, your Messis, well, not Rooney anymore, but you had your Dybala, you know, people who support Juventus, people who support Man United for Pogba. I think people would come out and support these people. So they think they're supporting their club rather than a country. And I think that's what, especially the number of Indian fans who support Argentina is insane. Argentina and Brazil, mainly because of Neymar and Messi.
Really?
Yeah, they're massive in India. And so is Ronaldo, but Argentina and Brazil get a lot of support from India.
It's just extraordinary, and I'm hopefully going to get the thoughts of Chris McCuddy. I had a sport on this a little later on, you know, from a sort of boring socio-economic point of view. I suppose that's FIFA's raison d'etre, isn't it, to spread the game of football worldwide. And whilst, Lloydie, we're seeing that game being spread through the fans, seeing results on the pitch, which are going to have an impact, like we saw with Russia this year.
Yeah, definitely. It's, you know, I mean, Russia were absolutely fantastic, weren't they? And what a tournament they hosted. The only thing they couldn't get right was the rain at the end for the presentation. But I'll tell you what, I was coming up on the gazing out the window of the metro this morning, and I actually wrote a little blues song.
Oh, I hear.
So I've got some lyrics for you.
Have you copyrighted this yet or not?
No, right, I'm okay. Putting this out. Maybe somebody can better me, I don't know. But here we go. This is my World Cup blues. I got the World Cup blues right down to my boots. I'm really going to miss when Harry Kane shoots. The goals, the fans and the AVR have made my summer spectacular. The flags of the nations have all come down and France now wear the World Cup crown. But we'll meet again in 4 years' time when the beautiful game will once again shine. Ah. My World Cup blues.
Look at that. I think that's got number one written all over it, isn't it, at the moment?
And that is one thing I just want to mention before I disappear. I didn't like this year's World Cup song. Sorry, Will Smith.
I loved it. I really loved it.
I couldn't sing it to you now.
No, I loved it. I really
you loved it?
It.
Yeah. Didn't we'll catch on though, did it?
No. Yeah. It wasn't like a Waka Waka or, you know.
But nothing will compare to Waka Waka. That's,
you know, that's the greatest, just, isn't it? And, you know, and Vindaloo and football's coming on.
That has to go at one point.
in terms of the void, though, the space, what we're going to do now, though? I mean, because the other thing that has amazed me, and I don't know if it's amazed you, is that, you know, we all work together now in one open space. And I sort of, Mr. Grumpy over in a corner with a cup of coffee and try and avoid people, but I listen. I'm a listener. And everybody who walks into the office, first thing they talk to somebody else about is the game last night.
Yeah.
What are they going to talk about now?
Yeah.
Nothing. Yeah. Silence rules in the office.
And is there something in that, do you think? Because we've all been invested, we've all had an element to do with this one. So we're confident to come in and go, oh, wow, did you see Costa Rica last night? They were dreadful.
And do you think it might have overshadowed other sports as well? Was Wimbledon quite the highlight with the World Cup going on?
No, I mean, looking at the Wimbledon crowds, people were out there watching. I was watching both the games at the same time. I don't think Wimbledon was dulled in any way.
No, but you're a massive tennis fan. Yeah, and you travel the world to watch your tennis and things like that. I think Lloydie's got a point there where other sporting events were overshadowed by it, because those that might be watching Wimbledon or might be watching the cricket or whatever were in fact invested. You know, I was watching a couple of the cricket games when the football was on and the crowd just sort of disappeared.
Half
the crowd disappeared. And the same happened with the Rafa Nadal game, the great semi-final with Novak as well. It makes for interesting times, that's for sure. So how will you fill that World Cup void? Do we need a time of reconnection, do you think, Gabby, with our other halves now?
I think we do now. I think my husband's got a bit of making up to do.
Yeah, I think I'll be rocking my granddaughter maybe a little bit more.
Paying attention to the loved ones.
Yes.
Well, bless you. Thanks to you both for being with us and sharing your World Cup experiences. And I mean, glad you mentioned the rain at the end there, because having seen that was extraordinary.
Some very expensive suits getting very wet.
but not Vladimir Putin.
No, of course.
He was all right. And then the other thing I read yesterday, which I found fascinating, was that last moment, you know, the money moment when they raised the World Cup and when Hugo Lloris was given the World Cup and they got all the rain coming down. It was all very dramatic. And then you had two security guards walk straight past the camera shot. So the money moment, all you've got is two blokes in suits. Oh. Mark Lloyd, bless you. Thanks very much indeed, my friend. Yep. Interesting summer to look forward to. You're going to be all over it down Everest.
Certainly are. Coming up on Sunday with a brand new show. Cannot wait. 2 p.m. Make sure you're with me on Sunday.
Looking forward to that. More details coming with us here on Dubai Eye over the next few days. So make sure you stay tuned for that. And Gabby, getting away for the summer, or is that it? You're here now?
I'm here now. I'm stuck. But I'll enjoy it. Yeah. No football. Just maybe some quality time with my husband. Let's see.
Quality time. Gabriel Keller, thank you very much indeed to you. To Mark Lloyd, thank you very much indeed to you. And thanks very much indeed to Mark as well for his poem come song, come a smash hit for the future months as well. So after a month straight of dramatic, high-stakes, thrilling soccer, the 2018 World Cup is over. After the intensity of the group stages, when you had to get your head around about three games a day, then we move on to the drama and the cliffhangers of the knockout stages, the intense emotions that comes with that as well. Hearts were broken, hopes were lifted, we all lacked a bit of sleep, and then of course it all came to that climax on Sunday that featured everything from pitch invasions to torrential downpours to Vladimir Putin under an umbrella, and of course the small matter of France winning the World Cup. Well, golden trophy has been hoisted, although we didn't really see it because security guys were in the way. A bit of confetti fell, but that didn't really work because there was, well, stronger rain that was falling at the time. It's been a rollercoaster ride of emotions. It's been a rollercoaster ride of, well, just about everything that can be thrown at football and sports fans. So what are you going to do? If you are a self-confessed football and sports nut, how on earth are you going to cope? Let's get Shivam on the line. He is exactly that. A World Cup addict in more ways than one. Shivam, first and foremost, did you enjoy the tournament?
Yeah, definitely. I think it was the best World Cup in my lifetime.
The next question is, what on earth are you going to do with yourselves?
Well, it's only 4 weeks now until the Premier League starts. Less than 4 weeks. So I can rewatch the entire World Cup again in that time.
Now, listen, you are a self-confessed football fan there. As you mentioned there, you love your Premier League football, but what's different about the World Cup? What is it that brings fans out to watch World Cup games that wouldn't watch La Liga, Serie A or Premier League games?
I think there's a certain uniqueness to the World Cup. I mean, there's no club affiliation. It's a country, you're supporting your country. And it's not as frequent as the Champions League or the Premier League. It's once every 4 years. So it's an entire football cycle, basically, from the last World Cup to the next one. There's a lot of changes and it's a lot of drama compared to club football because the stakes are higher.
In terms of the growth of the game, if you like, we see massive and record crowds turn out to watch World Cup, and they go out in public as well, which I find fascinating. Not everyone watches at home, etc. Is this going to be a great advertisement to help push the game in other parts of the world that might not be renowned for their football?
Oh yes, definitely. I mean, when you see countries like Panama and Iceland and Croatia, even with a country of a population of 4 million, making the World Cup final, it'll definitely boost it in smaller footballing countries. And with the next, and with the plans to make the World Cup a 48-team tournament, it will definitely cause a massive boost to football across the world.
Shivam, just finally, you've now had 24 hours to reflect on the World Cup that was. If you had to pick a highlight, one little memory that will, because most World Cups are renowned for just a couple of moments during their illustrious past, what would you say was the highlight of this year's World Cup?
It's very difficult to say, but for me, it was definitely the Spain-Portugal match. On the second day, the 3-3 Ronaldo's free kick. I think at that moment you knew something special was going to happen at this World Cup.
Shivam, you've only got 4 years to wait now. Well, just under 4 years, in fact. So you're all right. We'll have a little. In fact, it's 3.5 years. No, 3 years. No, for more than that. There. I know. We'll work it out and find out for the next one. But Shivam, thanks so much indeed. Enjoy the rest of the summer, and we will of course be in touch with more. And with Shivam there giving us his thoughts of how to deal with World Cup withdrawal symptoms. Shroot's in studio with me there, waving hands frantically.
Because it's December, it'll be November, December, so it's over 4 years. It'll be 4.5 years until
the
next one.
No, it's before that, though. It comes before.
No.
4.5 years, Tom. We've got to wait November 2022. It's a Winter World Cup, so we've got to wait longer than 4 years for the next World Cup.
Okay, I was convinced that it was happening...
2021.
Yeah.
No, 2022, unfortunately. Okay. So four and a bit years until the next World Cup.
What's the point then? What's the point?
Yeah.
That's the voice of Chris McCarty over there. He's our head of sport. He's had the opportunity to call each and every one of the games. Did you watch all the games?
I did. Yeah, I did. I caught at least a few moments of every single game.
Amazing.
It was an amazing World Cup. It really was. And I think we've got to say Russia have done an incredible job. Take what they do politically out the equation in terms of putting on a World Cup. It has been in my lifetime. It's been the best. 1998 was the best until this edition's come around. 169 goals. Actions aplenty. I thought Shivram spoke very well there. He's right. It set the tone. The 5-0 win for Russia on the opening day set the tone. We then had the 3-3 draw between Portugal and Spain, and then the World Cup took off from there.
Mm. Interesting as well that Shivram mentioned a certain Cristiano Ronaldo there as well. I mean... We know he's. We've just seen the big money move he's made from Real Madrid to Juventus, and the deals that are being done around that at the moment. The presence he brings was a great fact that was doing the rounds on one of the news bulletins earlier on today here on the show about that his social media presence is three times larger than that of Juventus at the moment. So that's what he brings to a club, and that's what he brings to World Cup fans as well. And do you think because we had so many sort of pin-ups for this year's World Cup, your Ronaldos, your Messis, your Neymars, etc., that it is a vintage time for football?
Absolutely that. That did help. The fact that they were a part of this party, but in many respects, I think the fact that they exited quickly, that this was an opportunity for new names to make their mark on football, I think has added to the excitement. And in many respects, the Premier League does kick off 3 weeks Friday, incidentally. Manchester United taking on Leicester over at Old Trafford. What it's done now, it's whetted the appetite for footballing fans who have now glimpsed other players. Ronaldo's now 33, Messi's the wrong side of 30. This is an opportunity for your Kylian Mbappes, dare I say a Paul Pogba now, to come through and really make their mark on the world stage. And I think that has just added to the collective feel that football is entering a kind of new era. There's new names now that are ready to take the titles away from Messi and Ronaldo, and that just for me has been one of the most memorable aspects of this FIFA World Cup.
Talk to me about the sort of growth of the game. Obviously, one of the mandates for FIFA is to spread the word. Not that you need to. I mean, show me a corner of the world that doesn't understand football or doesn't see football in some sort of form. But I suppose the idea is to try and encourage the playing of the game from grassroots up to elite level in other parts of the world. Is that working? And has a tournament like that worked to that end?
I'm a cynic in all of this, Tom. I think, yes, you're right. In an ideal world, that would be FIFA's mandate and FIFA's aim. I think their expansion to a 48-nation World Cup in 2026 is for two reasons, and two reasons only, to get China to the FIFA World Cup and to get India. You mentioned that the World Cup does cover all corners of the globe, and it does. But how much bigger would this World Cup be if China were competing with a Spain or a Portugal or an Argentina, if India were on the world stage competing with a Brazil and Argentina and England? If that was to happen, the FIFA World Cup, and I'm not kidding when I say this, could double in size in terms of its global audience, because yes, it is worldwide, it is an all-encompassing event, a lot of Indians, a lot of Chinese watch it, but when their own nation is in it, it becomes that much
bigger. Would they? True. So this is where I want to bring you in, because we were just having this conversation. And I mean, one of the things that has really struck me about this year's tournament as an observer, as a fan, is seeing the number of Indian fans I've been alongside, the number of Southeast Asians, the number of Chinese, the number, you know, even the Dutch, you know, coming in and the Italians coming in and watching, even though they weren't there. And it's this ability to bring fans to a public viewing space, a fan zone, or whatever, even if your team is not there. Now, if India was there competing, given what you've just told me a little earlier on about the fact that a lot of Indian fans out there go to see the marquee players, your Ronaldos, your Messis, your Mexicos, your Brazils as well, would there be split loyalties?
I think so, because recently there was a match in India, a football match, and our captain Sunil Chhetri, he did a tweet, an appeal saying, please come out and watch, we may not be that great, but we do need the support. And the support, it was raining, it was pouring, the streets were flooded, but the stadium was packed because someone made the effort to say, please come down and support us. And people did show up. So I feel like it is gaining momentum, and they have seen your Ronaldos, your Messis. And of course, we want someone from India to be a Ronaldo or a Messi. So yeah, I think it will be split.
Which I suppose therein lies the challenge at the moment. And we know, and we've got England against India in the cricket today, and India will probably be England today because they seem to have that, it's not seventh gear, but eighth gear or something to go into when they need to. They can control these things. We've seen a huge amount of investment into soccer in India, for example. We've seen a number of initiatives and policies to get Indian players into the Premier League, Asian players into the Premier League. It's not working though. We're not seeing the numbers. Why is that not happening?
I think it takes time. Things like this, and again, it's the old cliche, they don't happen overnight, Tom. We're seeing the Chinese government take a much greater interest now in football. We know the Chinese government own part of Manchester City. We've seen huge investment from, an expense for bringing some of the biggest players into Chinese football. All of this takes time. I am aware as well that the Chinese government, the construction of football pitches has doubled in size. There are a number of football pitches now popping up over China. So it will take time. 2026 isn't too far away. We're 8 years away. And looking at it, given the fact that it's a 48 nation World Cup, I'm pretty confident that China will most certainly be there. I think India have a little bit more work to do in order to ensure that they're at the top table of world football. But Gianni Infantino, the FIFA president, will be having everything crossed, his fingers and his toes, hoping that India are there. Because I take Shruti's point about the big names will always attract a certain fandom. But as we've seen with England, when you're there and doing well, it brings even more people to the party. And I've no doubt if China and India, and I'm using those two as an example, just like Scotland, Tom, me as a Scot, I watched the World Cup, but if Scotland there, even it harnesses even more interest. And I'm convinced that if India and China are there, you're going to see this FIFA World Cup just head into a whole different stratosphere. And that is quite incredible to say, given the fact that I think globally it's attracting something like 3.2 billion of an audience already. And to think that there are two nations, the biggest populated nations on the planet, are not yet there and part of it. It's a frightening prospect for the rest of sport.
You know, we're feeling like this. We're feeling a bit jaded and wondered what's happened to the last 5 weeks of our lives after 32 teams and 64 games. Imagine if there were 42 teams and...
It's an extra 16 games is what it is. So it goes up to 80 matches in 2026. It's 16 groups of three, Tom. The top two qualify from each group and we have a last 32. It is bonkers. I'm not for this idea and I'm all for the game being more inclusive. But I do think that FIFA have got this one wrong. And we've been talking about this in sports tonight. We've had a huge deluge of text messages. A lot of people out there saying, no, it's going to be more inclusive. In order for these smaller and footballing nations to thrive, they need to be exposed to the best players, the biggest tournaments. And I do get that to a certain extent. I just feel, though, that FIFA should have been looking at the qualifying structure a lot more, because the World Cup is about the very best. It is about being rewarded. If you make it all inclusive, what's the point of going through qualifying?
So let me be the cynic now for just a moment, if I can. And I'm seeing one thing in front of my eyeballs at the moment when I talk about this, which is dollar signs. No big surprise that America got... Okay, I know they've sort of hemmed it up by the fact that they've got, you know, Mexico and Canada, and they're going to give them 2.5 games each or something like that. But it's basically an American World Cup 2026 with an increased number of teams, with an increased broadcasting footprint, etc. America can afford it. America have hosted one successfully in the past as well. It's helped to drive the game of Major League Soccer over there. Let's take the scenario again that we were talking about earlier. A China and India hosting a World Cup in the future. Again, is that going to take it to another level, or is that something of a poison chalice for a country that is looking to develop its football at the moment? Last thing they need is to be building international stadiums to host 42 teams.
I take that point. I think there will be countries, though, that will point out, certainly South Korea and Japan, who hosted the World Cup in 2002, that it's a necessary building block to implement that culture of supporting football. It goes hand in hand. You build the stadiums, you build the pitches, you get more young kids in, and then I guess the idea idea, the thinking behind is you deliver the world's biggest football tournament so that these kids up close and personal can see what it means to live and breathe football for 4.5 weeks or 5 weeks, as the case may be, from 2026. So I think it does come hand in hand. Of course, it's a decision for the politicians. They've got to ensure it isn't cheap to run and host a World Cup. But I do see in the future, in the not too distant future, we could be talking 20 years from now, China or in India hosting a FIFA World Cup. And you're right to say that dollar signs. It is remarkable to think that FIFA is not for profit, and yet they chose America, Canada and Mexico, who have promised them $11 billion, that is, in profit. Yeah. Morocco, who was the country that was up against that bid, were promising about $4.6 billion. So you can understand why they've opted for America. Of course, if Gianni Infantino was here, he'd be promising you that an awful lot of that money would go back to the football associations and go back to the grassroots game. Make of that what you will.
Chris McCarty, we've been on something of a roller coaster. I asked Shiv on this one. I'm going to ask you as well. If there's one moment that sort of sums up the 2018 World Cup for you, I mean, we've had the hand of God in the past that's planned out time and time again, isn't it? As one of those great moments, the Maradona goals, etc., etc. Is there one sort of element that or moment that encapsulates this year?
Absolutely. Tom, extra time in the semi-final between Croatia and England. Mario Mandzukic goal to send England home as a proud Scot. That stands out for me. But I was over there. I was very fortunate to be over there watching Belgium, Brazil, being a part of a World Cup, being a part of a movement. And, you know, it's easy for us to sit behind microphones and talk about how wonderful the game is and how wonderful the World Cup is. Having been there on the streets, as I know you were, you really do get an understanding that there is no event, certainly that I've been privy to, that brings the world together in the way that it does. Everyone's got a smile on their face.
More than an Olympics?
More than an Olympics. I truly believe that. It's an unbelievable kind of equaliser that everyone just falls in love with football for 4.5 weeks. And I know that might sound a little cheesy and a little corny, but from my experience over in Kazan, incredible, incredible World Cup. And it's the unifying fact. It's the universal language, as they say, is football. And I have to tip my hat to Russia, to FIFA. I don't like praising them, but they've put on a great job, and the players and the teams themselves. It's been a wonderful World Cup.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. I think the only thing that comes close to anything that I've experienced is the darts at Ali Pali.
Yes, I've been there with my mother as well, Tom. You know that fine well. The World Darts Championship, end of the year, right up there. Just under the FIFA World Cup.
Chris, bless you, mate. Thanks so much indeed to you. That's Chris McCarty bringing us all the latest when it comes to World Cup withdrawals. Are you suffering from them at the moment? How are you filling the void? Thank you to you all for your contribution to the show this morning. Thanks very much indeed to all those that shared their thoughts on a couple of and a number of talkers. We were talking school drop-off a little earlier on. The suggestion being, could there be a limiting to that school drop-off? And would that help, not just in terms of green initiatives, but also in terms of efficiency on our roads? Asim wasn't convinced.
It's a terrible idea, I think, on all fronts. The way I look at it, whether it's an intrusion into a family's private decision, barring them from doing something which a normal family would do, dictating to them what they can or cannot do, I think that's on a private personal freedom front, that's probably is the first big no-no. Not all parents are violating traffic parking rules when they are dropping their children or picking them up from schools. It's only a small proportion of parents which does that. As a responsible parent, it's the responsibility of other parents to first maybe just ask them not to do something like that or inform the police.
Trevor came up with a rather severe solution to it all, says make them all a boarding school and build them in the desert. That's what he says. Trevor, thank you very much indeed for that one. Final thoughts from you, Shruti, before we say adieu?
Just this text, it's from Reese. It says, I love the school run. My daughter and I discuss new words she's learnt in school, and it's a great revision for me too.
Yeah, exactly. A little reminder. Trudy, thank you very much indeed to you. Milani, thank you very much indeed to you. To all of our listeners, thank you. We'll play out with the thoughts of Adam Zagar. Adam is the director of UAE Coaching. He was keen to point out, but there is an important time spent between parent and child on that school drop-off or pick-up and shouldn't be underestimated. Till tomorrow. Bye-bye.
You get the opportunity for that child and that parent to speak, to communicate quite openly. It's a focused time, and that time taken away will maybe limit that. I think it's a bonding time that will be lost. So I think from that aspect, we're missing out on that part. You get pluses and minuses of everything. I think what you'll get with the children is they'll get to mix with other children of all ages. So the big children can protect the little children. You can really demonstrate the leadership qualities in those big children. And the little children can learn how to be responsible, how to interact with, you know, different age groups, so the bigger children. So I think that really develops the confidence in the social skills.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.